Young is the author of 25 books of poetry, memoir, and fiction, with new work chosen by Edward Hirsch for the Best American Poetry 2016. Among his many honors are two American Book Awards and the privilege of serving as California State Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008.
It was like being knighted, and I got big paying gigs, you know, all over the state. People don't know about this because my actual salary as a poet laureate was $5,000 a year. I've done the math. How many poets do you know who get $437 a month?
Enjoy the humor of Al Young, who reads from his book Something About the Blues, an unlikely collection of poetry, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. A longtime resident of Berkeley, California, Al Young was born in 1939 near Mississippi's Gulf Coast. Then his family moved to Detroit, and he split his time between both places, as you'll hear in part one of this conversation at UMKC when he was the 2016 Cockafair Chair Writer in Residence. Here's Al Young talking about his influential family, beginning with grandparents Jordan and Lillian Campbell.
When she was a little girl, the daughter of a friend of his, he asked her father to save her for him. He traveled around calling set, as they call it in those days. He was quite a dandy. Do you know what calling set is?
No, tell me.
Music, horses, wagons, dances. It's a variant of the white version is do-si-do and grab your gal. Then the black version is different. But he went from town to town, and people lavished food and drink on him and money. His own whiskey was custom made for him. And at age 43, he married my grandmother when she was 16 or 17 years old. And
oh,
I have
wow.
a photograph of them taken in 1909 in Pachuta, Mississippi. She had just finished sewing the dress to take the photograph, and the photographer had arrived, and it necessitated his coming in from the fields, and he was quite the curmudgeon and Calvinistic slave driver. And he resented having to take this fool picture, and you can see him in the photograph with this frown on his face. It's quite a dramatic photograph, and the backstory to all of that is that my maternal grandmother, Mrs. Lillian Campbell, was the daughter of a mother who had been born into slavery. She was quite young when emancipation was declared, but she was still born into slavery. And she had been a product of William Kidd, K-I-D-D, who was the father of my grandmother's mother, white man. And when she was going to get married, it was necessary for him to see that she was properly taken care of. So he came to Mississippi, and he approved of the 90 acres that Jordan Campbell was going to work. And this leads into quite a sequence of historical events that most Americans don't know about.
Is there a poem that might be related to that?
I'm sure there is. Spread throughout prose and poetry. And I always go back to those days.
It was ringing a bell when you were telling that story.
Oh, yeah, here's one of them. A Sunday sonnet for my mother's mother. For Mrs. Lillian Campbell, consider her now, glowing, light-worn, arthritic, crippled in a city back room far from the farm where she was born when King Cotton was still in bloom. She is as southern as meat brown pecans or fried green tomato or moon pies, gathering now for 8 decades, eons of volunteered slavery, soften her size. Talk about somebody who's been there. This grand lady has seen, remembers it all, and can tell you about anyone, anywhere, in voices as musical as any bird's call. Loving her, it hurts to hear her say, "My grandchildren, they just threw me away."
A Sunday sonnet for my mother's mother, for Mrs. Lillian Campbell. That's one of the poems included in Al Young's Something About the Blues, an unlikely collection of poetry. I love the idea of this book because it not only pulls together a lot of your poetry, but it focuses on music, which is a big part of your life. And we have a CD that comes with this book. So that's really fun. Talk a little bit about putting this together, because when you listen to the CD, it's obvious that some of the recordings were done in a studio. Some of them were done in front of an audience with a band playing. So tell me a little bit about the production of this book.
It's quite unusual. The publisher is Sourcebooks Fusion, which is an Illinois-based publishing house. The CEO is a woman. She came up with the title. I mean, she told me all this. She said, I would publish you in a heartbeat, but I want the title to be Something About the Blues, an unlikely collection of poetry, and I want people to hear your voice, so I want a CD to be in the back of the book. This has never been done to me before. I always did my own titles, and I said, okay, all right. I was fascinated. And she says, I want all poems about music. So that was easy to do. So it's the one book of mine that was produced using my material, but I had a marginal say in how it was going to be presented.
How fascinating.
Brilliant. It was
wow.
Brilliant.
So can you talk a little bit about the importance of music to you? Because, you know, one of the things that you can figure out when you read over your work, and I'm not just talking about Something About the Blues, but The Sound of Dreams Remembered and Coastal Nights and Inland Afternoons, all of these have allusions to music, blues, jazz, Motown, classical. It's obvious that you have a wide-ranging love for it. And you have a beautiful voice. I actually got to hear you read as part of the Cock Affair Chair Writer in Residence here at UMKC. You actually sang a few things during your reading. So what made you decide to be a writer rather than a musician?
I don't separate those. My father was quite a gifted musician. He played tuba and bass in the 1930s and 40s with a traveling jazz band that worked in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama. That was not his day job. He was a mechanic and a motorcycle messenger, and he was a very interesting character. He loved music. In fact, it was in the days when RCA Victor had these subsidiary labels. They had three labels, like Bluebird, and one of them was race music, as they call it. Race music was a euphemism for music for colored people. And he got paid by the week in those days, but he would take a dollar of that. You could get 378 RPMs. Sometimes he'd buy six recordings. My mother would have a fit because we needed that money, you know, because that was a big deal. But he had a very big record collection, and it included everything. He had totally Catholic taste. He loved jazz, of course, and swing music and the big bands. He also loved what we used to call hillbilly music. Now it's called country music. In fact, his second wife, whose name was Georgia, who was from Wismar, Louisiana, and I was visiting them in Detroit at one time, and she was sitting out in the car. She had Hank Williams on, who was a genius. Jambalaya and a crawfish pie and a filet gumbo. 'Cause tonight I'm going to see Mama Cheryl Mio. And I said, Georgia, you listen to country music? She said, can't you tell I'm getting homesick? And people don't know this. They think only white people listen to country music, but it was part of the fabric. And I certainly loved it when I was growing up. And it's all the blues anyway. You can hear those blues tonalities. He liked pretty music, as he called it, you know, sweet ballads, vocalist. He loved classical music, light classical. I and my siblings would sit in front of this heater. I think we were burning wood, but it had a little window, and you could see the flames making these patterns. And we'd put on a record and turn out the lights, and we'd have our own little motion pictures. This is in the 1940s. And we could actually point out the stories we were telling in the flames in the same way that when you sit by the ocean, people like to sit by oceans or in front of fireplaces because they're natural places for dreaming because they give you a focal point that reenacts your dreams. But it was all filled with music. Everybody in my family played something. My mother sang. I had a brother who was named after the French actor Franchot-Tone, except we pronounce it Franchot, and his nickname was Frank. He became quite a prominent classical piano prodigy. and eventually would play for Lyndon Johnson at the White House and work with the Cleveland Symphony. And,
really? This was your
Detroit.
Brother?
It's my brother under me, Francho, named by my Aunt Ethel, the only person in the family who drank coffee, and she read. She always had big stacks of paperbacks, usually detective novels, Rex Stout and, you know, people like that.
You are such a storyteller. You're a novelist, you're a poet, you're an essayist. But before we get too far away from the CD, I'm going to play the James Cotton Band at Keystone, if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
It's fun because you get to hear the band in the background. Mm-hmm. Where was that one recorded? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. It was recorded at the CIA, that is the California Institute of the Arts, which is a very fancy art institute in Southern California. And the band is comprised of their jazz faculty, top-notch musicians.
What I love about this is that it has the feeling of a live reading, too, because mm-hmm. you share a little bit about what you're going to read.
Everybody knows this is the blues, right? It runs right through the mainstream of American music. And whether you're listening to an actual blues artist like B.B. King or Lead Belly, or you're listening to George Gershwin or Emmylou Harris or Willie Nelson or Charlie Parker or John Coltrane, Aretha Franklin, you're listening to the blues. I don't know what you can say about a nation whose basic music is the blues, but it sure makes you feel good sometimes. The James Cotton Band at Keystone. And the blues, I tell you, they blew up on target. Blew the roof right off and went whistling skyward. Starward, stilling every zooming one of us mojoed in the room that night, that instant, that whenever it was. Torn inside at first, we all got turned out, twisting in a blooming space where afternoon and evening fused like Adam with Eve. The joyful urge to cry mushroomed into a blinding cloudburst of spirit wired for sound, then atomized into one long, thunderous, cooling downpour. What ceased to be was now and now and now. Time somehow was what the blues froze tight like an underground pipe before busting it loose in glad explosions, a blast that shattered us. Ice, flow, and all. The drift of what we'd been began to shift, dragging us neither upstream nor down, but lifting us safe and high above the very storm that only flashing moments ago we'd been huddling in for warmth. Melted at last, liquefied, we became losers to the blues and victors both. Now that he'd blown us away with his shout, this reigning brown-skinned wizard, wise to the ways of alchemy, squeezed new life back into our broken hearts, breathing through cracks, coaxing and choking while speaking in tongues that fork and bend like the watery peripheries of time, a crime no more punishable than what the dreaming volcano does, waking from what it was. Believe me, the blues can be volatile too, but the blues don't bruise. They only renew. I love my baby, but my baby don't love me. That's why the man wrote a song called Things Ain't What They Used to Be. Welcome to the blues.
That's just one of the cuts from Something About the Blues, an unlikely collection of poetry by Al Young. And that's part of the nearly 60 minutes of blues poetry, often with a band, sometimes not, that's included with this book. This is New Letters on the Air. And what year was that recorded in?
2005, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did source books get a hold of all these recordings? Did you supply them or
I supplied them. Most of the musicless tracks I produced myself. But because we had the live tracks, our publisher decided to combine them.
It's so great to hear that particular one because in a way, it also felt almost like a title poem for the book
mm-hmm.
because you have that introduction about the blues in
yes.
there and how important it is, you know,
yes.
and how much it is at the root of all our music in America.
It's a cry. And it's not limited to American music. If you really are attentive to world music, it's come to be called. Stevie Wonder says the pentatonic scale, that's the black keys, is the people's scale. And you can hear that cry, and I always imagine that it's an expression of the pain that's at the center of a lot of human life. It doesn't matter if you live in Beverly Hills or Bed-Stuy. We all suffer.
We do.
It's a longing, and I look at it spiritually. We know that we're more than just flesh and blood, but it's very hard to answer why. I mean, I can tell people, but, you know, they don't believe you. Capitalism has done a job on us. You know, we believe ourselves to be individuals. There's no such thing. Everybody is connected to everything else. We owe everything that we are to everybody who's come before us and everybody who's around us. We breathe the same air and we drink the same water. And it's very hard to get people away from identifying with this cocoon of flesh, which is basically how we conceive of ourselves. But I think we're getting closer. We're being forced to look at what's going on in the bigger picture.
There's a poem in here called Something About the Blues,
mm-hmm.
which I assumed came first.
No,
but did she?
No.
Oh, really?
I wrote that afterwards. You know, I'm a freelance writer.
Right.
And I thought we have to have something called Something About the Blues.
Yeah.
So I wrote one.
Oh, that's neat. Well, let's have you read that.
Okay, sure. Something about the blues that catches way down in the throat of Howlin' Wolf or Taj Mahal, that tingle the nipples of Dinah Washington and Leontine Price. Something about the blues can drive a good woman mad, make her give up and take up shopping carts to push the homeless streets and die without the dignity of a dog. Something about the blues can also cauterize the wound that wobbles around the winded world like a hula hoop. Something about the blues swoops down on you so soft and easy that the slippery salt seam that sews sleep to wakefulness melts down to let love pour all over you like radiation. Something about the blues tunnels through you straight up to the bottom of all that oils. Something about the blues makes a billionaire tremble when she knows she stands to lose half a billion. Something about the blues looks back at you, an ancient star creature, every time you stare into the night sky from a place uncompromised by urban light leak. Something about the blues belongs where sound leaves off and light takes up the spectral hum. Something about the blues would sooner draw blood than breath in this fragile century that streams out beyond total horror. Something about the blues outlasts the subtle electricities the science of our time has yet to find, much less map or capture or comprehend. Something about the blues curls around the world like a Yankee-sized question mark. Something about the blues makes you wonder, if you still wonder, if you still dream, what's taking Earth under?
Something About the Blues, the title poem from the collection that's an unlikely collection of poetry by Al Young, who was the California Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008. So do you see writing almost like composing then?
Yes. When I started to get interested in writing and storytelling, I was sitting in the catbird seat because I'd started reading at age 3. And became
That's pretty precocious.
Well, it wasn't really. Our parents were eighth grade graduates, but people don't understand who weren't there. The eighth grade sounds like, oh, you didn't finish your education. No, that was considered finished
right.
in those days. An eighth grade graduate was expected to be able to handle anything. And so they were readers, and my mother and my dad would take turns seating the kids in their laps with arms around them and go read. And I was fascinated by this. I would look at their mouths and look down the page and try to figure out what the pattern was. And my dad would point out the words. He would say, no, Skippy, you don't say it like that. You know, the treacheries of English. And I became a nuisance, I say, because I would read everything out loud. He would sometimes take me with him to New Orleans or to a gig. And I would read every sign that we passed by, billboard. And he would say to my mother, my nickname as a child was Skippy. He'd say, Skippy show can't read, can he? I was surrounded by oral storytelling, which was superb. Any Mississippian, in the words of my Uncle Billy, who I thought was a great storyteller, in late life when I go to visit him down in Meridian, Mississippi, you know, I said, I've written about you, Uncle Billy, because you really can tell stories. He'd been a sleeping car porter. Going across the country.
Oh, he had
making
some stories.
Bed. He would tell other people's stories in the third person.
Yeah.
He said, if you think I'm good, you ought to see so-and-so. He'd keep you up all night telling you something interesting. And I mean, it was quite the upbringing for a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And originally, there was no separation between poetry, storytelling, dance, and music. I mean, our ancestors didn't sort those out.
Right.
That was later done as people became aware of things like art and, you know, categorization and all of that. But what I loved about the little village that I was farmed out to literally from time to time, I haven't mentioned that my mother was 15 years old when she gave birth to me. So she was pretty young.
That's pretty young.
And so sometimes it would just...
And you're the oldest, I
yes,
take it.
Yes, of 7. And sometimes it was tough. So in those days, it was very common for people to say to their sister or brother, could you take these two, you know, for a little while until I get myself together? I'll come for them. You know, like, so I was farmed out to my grandparents and to an aunt and uncle. And there's still a big hurt about that. But at the same time, it made me very independent because I was used to knowing that you got to be ready for anything. And it made me very flexible. When I was brought back north, I knew how to speak like people up north. Down south, you called it a guitar. When you got up north, it was a guitar. And so I was multilingual. And we all were. My sister, Evita, epitomizes that. She came home from school one day in Detroit, and she said, "Phew, back home, I can talk the way I like to talk. If I had to talk the way I have to talk at school all day, I would just be tired."
Well, you know, you're talking about longing and pain, but there's also a pleasure that comes with longing.
Yes.
And I'm going to have you read one more poem that is on the recording in Something About the Blues and is also included in your collection, Coastal Nights and Inland Afternoons, poems 2001 to 2006. This came out after you were the California Poet Laureate.
Right.
And you actually have this poem in here as well.
Is it Doo-Wop the Moves?
It is.
I love this poem.
I love this poem too.
In that long period that I remember as my adolescence. It seems to have gone on for 35 or 40 years because when you're a teenager, you know, time is still slow. And all the things you can crowd in are amazing when you think back in retrospect. And I still have friends from those days, like Lily Tomlin. And there's so many stories crowded into just a tiny period that you wonder where all that energy came from. And on the CD that's included in Something About the Blues, there's more backstory. This is taking place in Detroit, which is right across the river from Windsor, Ontario. They appear to be two different places, but there's a symbiosis between them, as there is always with neighboring regions. And the imagery draws on that fact. The other thing that I didn't mention in this rendition of it is that that memory is from a period when everyone was putting in a recreation room, a rec room, and they ranged all the way from a folding card table by a coal furnace to real fancy ones that Sears and Roebuck would come out and build you a proper rec room. But we pubescents did the same thing when parents disappeared. And the hip guys, they didn't stay away from the fast dances, but they knew slow dancing was where it was at. You know, because then you got to, you know, rub up against somebody.
That's right. You know. That's exactly
And
right.
Think about now the way people dance. They don't touch.
Yeah.
You know, you do your little thing in front of somebody else, and it really tells you a lot about how society has deviated from intimacy. Doo-wop the moves. Let's make no bones about it. Whatever this means or ever meant to you, darling, you know your way through what I'm about to say. Doo-wop still steals the moment, the sizzling thrill of closeness, the slowness of our touch. Too much, too messy to process. Back when dawn rose off the river, we'd feel it. Feel felt like enough when flowering was new and not easy to handle. Neither was breathing. All that light funneling in from Canada ferried over the river while you put a move on my heart. Heart and soul, flesh and bone, doo-wop was known to sabotage. All across the land, white citizens' councils shouted and warned, Negro music is corrupting white youth. Boycott Negro music. We were young, too. You pressed your hand behind my neck. You kissed my mouth. Wham! So who'd kissed whom? You still wonder? In one slow move, you slithered and drizzled snail trails all up and down eroded maps of me. Doo-wop, stone slow of step, sticks to you, lasts. The doo-wop mind cries, Oh, baby, you know I love you. Always thinking of you. I place no one above you, and you know I'll never snub you. Under doo-wop's spell, you make no bones. You shake your perfume booty. You go for keeps.
Doo-wop, the moves. This music starts Al Young's recorded version in Something About the Blues. The poem was published earlier in Coastal Nights and Inland Afternoons by Angel City Press in 2006 when he was California State Poet Laureate. For links, visit newletters.org. Al Young was the fall 2016 Cockafair Chair Writer in Residence at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. We'll hear more from that visit next time on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC. Today's show was produced with Blake Elizondo, Nicole Dorsey, Mackenzie Callahan, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.